Gordon has a new book out, Really Mysterious Pennsylvania, UFOs, Bigfoot, and Other Weird Encounters, Casebook 1. So I imagine that means a sequel, but Casebook 1 is out, and we thought it would be a great idea to invite Stan to spend a little time with us here, do a complete show about the strange, weird, high strangeness of occurrences in Pennsylvania. He's been investigating that since 1959. He has been involved with the investigations of thousands of mysterious events, including UFO sightings, encounters with strange creatures such as Bigfoot, Black Panthers, Thunderbirds, as well as other very weird events. Stan, it's always great to have you on the show, and I'm glad to have you on again.
Well, I appreciate talking to you again, Jerry. It's been quite a while.
Stan, as you heard me mention at the top of the show, this is Casebook 1. That must mean you are planning on another book?
Oh, we're considering down the road. You know, I've been involved in this now going on 51 years. It'll be this October. And during that time, I've been involved in investigation of literally thousands of very strange cases here across Pennsylvania. And many people have encouraged me over the years that, you know, even though I've written and discussed and published some of this information, there's so many very interesting cases that have not seen the light, and so a lot of people have encouraged me to come out with this.
Yeah, we have something in common. We both started doing this stuff in the late 50s. And before everybody thinks we're really old, we're not youngsters, but we actually started, I know I did, and so did you, when we were very, very young.
Well, actually, how I got involved, my birthday coincidentally is October 30th, Halloween Eve, and it was on my 10th birthday back in 1959 when my parents gave me a new AM radio, and I was tuning around the AM radio dial that night, and because of the Halloween season, there were some radio shows on talking about strange happenings, flying saucers, hauntings, strange creatures, and I was pretty curious when I was a youngster, and I was listening to the program and wondered if these stories were made up or if anybody, these people were actually telling the truth. So I began to make some frequent trips to the Greensburg Library here in town and read all the books they had on the subject. And as time went on, I would watch the newspapers and cut out articles, make scrapbooks. If something locally happened, about something unusual, I'd call the people on the phone and talk to them about it. And that's what got me started. And then I was 16 years old when the incident happened near Kecksburg, PA, which is about 12 miles from my hometown of Greensburg. And it was the Kecksburg UFO incident that led me on my, I guess, lifetime pursuit to try to find some answers to the UFO phenomenon.
Yeah, bring us up to date on Kecksburg. I mean, that you guys really, Leslie and you, have really done some great work investigating that. And what's the latest? I mean, did it turn out to be a Russian satellite, or was it something extraterrestrial, or what?
Speculation as to what this thing was.
Uh-huh.
And there's been more and more information that surfaced in recent years, especially through the fact that the Leslie Kane and the Coalition for Freedom of Information did quite an extensive investigation on the case. And you know, a lot of information came forth as a result of that. And I continued to receive leads on the case, and there is no doubt whatsoever that an object of unknown origin fell from the sky that late that afternoon and was recovered by the military. What that object is still open for a lot of speculation. But, I mean, a lot of possibilities, and I have a lot of people who have contacted me over the years who believe they know exactly what it was, and, I mean, there are many different people who are sure they know what this thing was, but of course, nobody has the evidence for it, and when you compare their information to what we really believe to be accurate information, it still remains open as to what this thing may have been.
Yes, Stan, I still remember the show we did where you described the acorn-shaped thing crashing there in the woods, and them seeing some people seeing a hatch open and an arm reach out.
Well, that's another whole different story, and there's no way we can prove that story once, you know, once and for all, but the interesting thing how that story came about was, and for those that are listening, you know, I probably should talk a little bit about what we know, but just really briefly for people who aren't aware of the case.
I think that'd be a good idea.
Okay. So we're going back to December 9th of 1965. Late afternoon, it was almost dark. Multiple reports over a widespread area from tip of Ontario, Canada, over Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, as this brilliant fire object moving across the sky. Just to make the story short, the object came in over the greater Pittsburgh area. A lot of people saw this thing. People thought at first it may have been an aircraft on fire. The object moved out into Westmoreland County over Greensburg, and it proceeded out roughly out Route 30 east, but it made a turn to the south. And it was observed by various people in these small rural communities out there, moving out towards the mountains, towards Laurelville, where apparently the object made another turn, began to head back towards Kecksburg, made another turn, and went down into the woods. Those who saw the object descend said it didn't come down at a high rate of speed like something crashing as such, but it came in almost like a controlled landing. And moments after it fell, people reported like a column of kind of bluish smoke with some dust that came up, but it dissipated quite quickly. Well, there's a lot we didn't know when it happened that day. I mean, that night it began to hit the news media around the greater Pittsburgh area, radio, TV, and there was a lot of news stories about it. It was making away the news wires that something reportedly had been seen, something reportedly had fallen near Kecksburg, Westmoreland County. And as the evening went on, it got much more fascinating because reports came in that the military was now moving into that small farming community and they were going to search for an unidentified flying object which had fallen into the nearby woods. Well, again, the next day, it's a front page story in all local papers hitting the national news wires, and they talk about the military was there, that the air was cordoned off, but then officially later that day, it came across that there had been a search, that people had been mistaken, nothing had fallen, people had seen a bright meteor in the sky, and nothing had been found on the ground. Well, now we know years later that, and we know more about what happened that night as well, but years later we find out that various people went down into the wooded area and came across this large semi-buried metallic acorn-shaped object semi-buried in the ground. One witness who has been a machinist all his life, who was very close to the object, said the best way he could describe it was, he said, it looked like somebody took liquid metal and poured it into an acorn-shaped mold. And he said this thing estimated, again, it's semi-buried, that's maybe 10 to 12 feet or more in length, about 8 to 10 feet in diameter. There's no rivets, no seam, no weld marks, no fuselage, no wings. But on the bottom, like the acorn, the raised up back of the acorn, there are these raised up markings on that ringed area, as he called it, the bumper area, that look more like symbols. And he said years later, going into the libraries and searching through different books, trying to find something similar, he said, closest thing he could describe was something like ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics. Now, again, officially nothing was found, but we believe from many eyewitness accounts, and I remember days after the event happened, there was a lot of talk around this area that people had seen a large military flatbed tractor trailer carrying a large tarpaulin-covered object away from the area at a high rate of speed late that night, which would have been early in the morning of December 10th. Well, in the summer of 1990, before the Unsolved Mysteries did their season premiere on the Kecksburg incident, I was approached by a gentleman, and he told me, and we were able to check his information out, that he was a member of the Air Force Security Police who had guarded the object when it came in on the early morning hours of December 10th to Lockbourne Air Force Base outside of Columbus, Ohio. And anyhow, he said that there was a security perimeter set up, that the tractor trailer was backed into a hangar, that the security was very, very high that morning, that they were given a shoot to kill warning to anybody that approached that area without the proper clearance or identification. And anyhow, this person told me that they were only there for a certain period of time, but later he heard that the object on the truck went over to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And then we have other people who confirm about it going to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, independent of him. And even today, I'm sure they all know each other because he's never been identified. And well, what we find out is that the object went to Wright-Patterson to a particular warehouse building on the base. And after Unsolved Mysteries aired, there was quite a lot of input of information from different people. People who had lived in this area and had moved away. Other people claimed information. Some people gave me some pretty interesting information anonymously. But this one guy, his name was, we'll call him Myron, he told me he had worked for a large supply house in Ohio when this occurred. And he said, I saw this on TV, and he said, I guess I'm allowed to talk about it now since it's on television. So he goes on to tell me how he was working for the supply house, that a Navy officer came to the supply house with an order for a large supply of this special type of glazed engineering brick to be taken to the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And there was a second truck driver involved as well. He would not initially talk to us or confirm it, but later he did. And we find out the other truck driver went to the base the day before with the first supply of these special bricks. And he said he saw this flatbed trailer with this tarped object outside the warehouse building. He said he described like a big Liberty Bell from the shape from what he could see. And the next day, he and Myron both returned to the base. They were escorted in, and Myron and the other driver were told, just do your job, don't be looking around. But Myron was there for quite a while unloading these pallets of bricks, and he was curious because he was seeing these men coming in and out of this warehouse building with white coveralls, various type of protective gear, sidearms, and occasionally, as I recall, he said they were changing their outer clothing, and he wondered what was going on. So at a particular time when he didn't see anybody around the entrance, he ran over and looked inside, and he said inside, up in the scaffolding, was this large, again, acorn-shaped object, kind of an off-gold bronze color, with these unusual markings at the bottom. There was ladders going up, there were men on the ladders, and they were apparently trying to get inside of this object. And, again, there's a lot more to the story. We could spend days and days talking about Kex. But anyhow, when I went to interview Myron for the video documentary I did called Kexbook, The Untold Story, which, by the way, is available on DVD, and people can order that through my website as well at stangordon.info, he was not in very good physical shape, as you can see on the interview, and surprising to me and those with me, he told me something he had not discussed before. And apparently he had talked to his son, and his son said, why are you going to even tell him about it? And he said, well, I may not be around to tell him about it in the future. So anyhow, he went on to say that that same time he saw the object inside, it was not well lit in there. There was like a parachute-type device over top of it. It was not very well lit in there. And he said there was a table. And on the table, all he could see was a body, apparently a short body, not real long, that was covered over with a cloth, and all he could see was the one arm hanging down, and it had looked, he said, the skin looked lizard-like. And I talked to him many times, and he wouldn't change the story. He said, that's all I could see. So that was interesting, okay? Now, as the Coalition of Freedom of Information is doing their investigation, Leslie Kane and a lot of investigation going on, and it began to hit the local news around here that there was a very serious investigation going on the case. And so anyhow, more and more people at that time began to come forward with some additional information. And as I recall, there was one particular name on that list, and that name rang a bell because many years before, I think probably now my memory is probably 13, 14 years before that time, this name had come up from a gentleman who reportedly was down in the woods that night hiding, but was watching some of the military operation recovering the object. So we had contacted him at that time, and he didn't deny it, but he just basically said he was afraid of getting in trouble and he didn't want to talk about it. But now here's this name came up again. So I went out and I made contact with him and went out to interview him, and when I went out to the house, you could tell he was a little nervous, and he said, you know what, I was going to just call and cancel it because my family still doesn't want me to get involved. And but he said, you're here, so we'll talk to you a little bit about it. And we talked a little bit, and you know, I spent some time and listened to what he had to say. And then finally he said, well, I'll tell you some information about what happened that night. He was concerned that the government might come after him is what his concern was. Anyhow, he went on to tell me about what happened that afternoon, how he happened to get down into the woods, how he found the area, because he used to hunt down that area, which other people had as well. And he came across this object again, semi-buried in the ground. It was some type of arcing coming off of which other people reported as well, which is what attracted him to go down. And he hid around it because other people began to come into the woods, and he was hiding around the trees. There was a lot of trees down that area. And he watched as different people came in. Civilians came in, then military came in. And basically he started to tell me about how this object was buried in the ground, what the area looked like, and he tells me about this. First of all, one thing I thought was very fascinating, he said, there's military people coming in, but also there's one guy in particular, and he said he was a politician. I said, what do you mean he was a politician? He said he was all dressed up in a black suit and a black hat, and he was, like, giving orders to the military people. And I thought that was pretty interesting. But he goes on to describe how there was an army officer, I believe he said it was an army general, I believe he said that, jumped on top of the object, and he had some type of a long, like a metal probe with him. And he struck, at one point, for whatever reason, he struck the surface of the object with that probe. And he said moments later, like from the front area of the object, was like a hatch opened up. And all of a sudden, you could just see his demeanor change. He was very emotional, very upset. His voice was quivering, and he said, I swear to God, sir, there was something inside of that thing. And he was very hesitant, but he tried to tell me how it happened in a matter of seconds. This hatch opened up, and he said this long, almost like an elongated elastic arm, he said, came out, and he could just see, I believe he said, two appendages. And he said there must have been another arm, but from his position he couldn't see it. And it just slammed shut very quickly, metal on metal. And the officer jumped off of the object and started yelling, hurry up, we don't have much time. And he watched as they began to dig around it, and he told me in detail how they were able to winch this thing over, because they couldn't bring the trucks down right to the crash site, and how they moved it over and lifted it up on top of the flatbed. So it's a very interesting story. And so you have two different people, and I'm quite positive he had no way of knowing, didn't know anything about the other guy in Ohio telling about that story. And then you got to look at, for example, Bill Weaver, who was a very reputable person, who was a teenager that night, who was out there after hearing the radio reports that something had fallen. He was on this lane, this old farm lane, which was closest to where the impact site was, and that's the lane where a number of people found a way to the scene that night, where a lot of the military activity was going on. Most of the people, however, apparently hundreds, were jammed along this little country road on the opposite side of the hill, but they weren't anywhere close to where this thing actually came down. But anyhow, Bill said at one point as he's there, this big white box truck pulls up, and it's unmarked, and out of the box truck, here's what he described as four men like in moon suits, like some type of protective gear, and from out of the truck they take this big square box, which is almost like on some type of a stretcher device, and they each grab a handle. This thing, I believe we said, was about 4x5 square, and they take it down. They start walking down towards the ravine where the thing reportedly fell, and of course it's too small to put the object in, so it makes you always wonder what are they going to put inside of that device. So there's some interesting little tidbits here, which makes one wonder if there may be more to the story.
These events like Kecksburg and Roswell, they drive me nuts. I mean, it's been years, decades, and we still don't know what happened. It probably bothers you too, Stan. We just don't know, do we?
No. I mean, I know what building actually that thing was taken to, but of course, that was in 1965. Where it's at today, of course, we have no idea.
Uh-huh. Let's get back to your book. You had some great things in here. And Pennsylvania is kind of like New Mexico. I mean, they don't look, you know, nothing looks the same. But both places are locations for lots of high strangeness. And you've investigated your share. What about that UFO that blocked the train or caused the train derailment? You remember that?
Well, that's one of the interesting stories we have in here. And, of course, there's many strange reports, and, of course, there's no way to prove it because, officially, the train company said it was caused by a split rail. But, actually, That event was pretty interesting. It happened in a suburb of Pittsburgh. It was early morning hours, and the report actually, it was surprising because the story actually made news in the greater Pittsburgh area. And what we understood talking with the police officer was that there was this train derailment, and there was a gentleman who was parked over by a mall. There's a shopping mall right over in that area. And the gentleman was sitting there parked at the time that this happened. And anyhow, he observed this bright, what he described to one of the officers as like a spaceship of some type. And the object, he said, proceeded towards the direction of the train. And he said when it was right over top of the train, he said all of a sudden he began to notice this great amount of sparking from underneath the train cars. And he said moments later is when the train derailed. And the police officer said the man appeared to be very serious. He wasn't drinking. And so it's one of those stories that you don't hear about very often, but was pretty interesting.
You got some great stories in that book about UFOs being traffic hazards. I think another one either blocked a highway or a bridge abutment or something.
Oh, we have a lot of cases over the years of large objects pacing cars, hovering over roadways. We even have cases on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. But I think the sighting you might be referring to was an event that happened back in 1983 outside of Derry, Pennsylvania. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this was an event that now this area out around Derry Township, it's outside of Latrobe, PA, and it's a hotbed for reports because it's along the base of the Chestnut Ridge. And the Chestnut Ridge is a mountain range. It's about 100 miles long that runs from Preston County, West Virginia, to Westmoreland, Fayette, and Indiana County in southwest Pennsylvania. And there is a long history of strange activity. UFO sightings, a lot of Bigfoot sightings, which are even going on in recent weeks and months again up in that area. Other strange creatures, black panthers, mountain lions, reports of over the years of underground sounds, and just a lot of weird phenomena along the Chestnut Ridge.
Yeah, they have a lot of Bigfoot stuff up there, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've had some amazing, and the book has some very detailed, very close Bigfoot encounters that have happened even within the last year. And so some fascinating stories in the book. But anyhow, the event you're talking about occurred just before midnight on August 30th, 1983. The gentleman was riding down Route 217 towards Derry when he noticed a series of, like, amber lights that were pretty low, that appeared right above him, about 40 to 60 feet above his vehicle. And, in fact, it was so low that he thought his carrier might hit the top of the light area up there. And as he's passing under the lights, he soon realizes that he's underneath a huge object that he figures this thing is covering both sides of the roadway. It's tremendous in size, figured maybe 200 to 300 feet in diameter. And he said it's of a battleship gray color. There's kind of a bluish tinge around it. The bottom underneath was flat, but there seemed to be an area underneath almost like a square or a rectangle or some kind of a black opening. It's about 40 to 60 feet in that general area in size. And it gave him the impression of some type of like a doorway possibly it could open. But the entire perimeter object was covered in amber-colored lights that produced like a soft, bright glow to them. And the guy said that there was a sound coming from it that was just, it was like a bassy sound that actually, he said, it just reverberated through his body. And he said when he was underneath the thing, it was so massive that he felt claustrophobic, almost as though he was driving to an underground parking area. But what was so amazing was this object hovers over his vehicle, and then a short time later, it rushes down the road in front of him. He hurries up at a higher rate of speed to get away from this thing, and it stops above him again. He had to pass on this thing three different times. It came right over the top of him, hovered, he moved away, and once again it moved down the road three different times till it finally shut off across the sky and disappeared. And he was very upset after the incident, called the local police, and that's how I got the report on it.
Yeah,
but, I mean, we have had multitudes of very close, detailed encounters here in Pennsylvania for many, many years. I mean, I started investigating these cases in the late 1960s after the Keksberg event, and there, I mean, the classic cases we used to hear about in the 50s and 60s, which you don't hear about them that often anymore, but back in those days, we had some amazing stories, and occasionally we still get those kind of reports.
Our guest is Stan Gordon. He's on the line from Pennsylvania, and he has more to talk about in our next segment. So stand by. This is Jerry Pippin. You're listening to the UFO Files. Millions have witnessed on movie screens around the world, beginning in the 1950s and right on through 2010, the landing of flying saucers. Many of these movies were made in New Mexico. And this year, from July 1 through July 4, during the 63rd anniversary of the Roswell 1947 UFO crash, these motion pictures will once again be part of the gigantic celebration and fun over that weekend in Roswell. Make your plans now. Rooms will soon be at a premium. Thousands from around the world are coming to Roswell, the Mecca for UFO lore. It's an event of a lifetime. Roswell, 2010. Roswell, July 4th weekend. Be there.